And we have with us right now on PMP Network Stan Zapka. His book is called Razzmatazz, My Life in Music, Television, and Film. What a career it has been. Unbelievable, huh?
It's been a wonderful ride.
Yeah. Now, you, well, you've done so many things. I mean, but from winning Emmy Awards to writing songs that are one of the top Christmas songs around. We've talked about it. And you know what I thought was really cool in the book here?
No.
Your brothers and World War II.
Yeah, there were eight of us in World War II.
I thought that was just so cool.
Well, I want to do a television special on that story, Mark, because it's there are only two of my brothers and I are left of my family of 12.
Wow.
And one of them is here in California with me, another one's in Florida. And we're all of us closing in on the ripe old age.
Yeah, I understand. I thought it was a fascinating story, and about Bob flying around and meeting you guys, and it's a nice prelude to the book, because there's so much stuff in this book, but I kind of like that because it's family stuff, and I like that.
Thank you. Well, being a poet, and you've deciphered a lot of family and nice thoughts. So.
Well, yeah, I mean, but history kind of flows through the book in so many ways, because you have the history of the wars and all that stuff in the background, and then the history of music and television flowing through it as well.
Yes. It was a little bit of a task to try to pinpoint what the story was all about, because there are so many, huh?
There are. Yeah, but I like
it. You've had quite a story yourself, so I know you understand that.
Well,
your life story.
Well, my life story is I haven't written anything yet. I'm not going to write any biographies yet.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that the things that are in here are just amazing. The people that you worked with. Let's say everybody. The first thing we talk about is Johnny Carson, because I know you worked on The Tonight Show.
Yes.
With Johnny Carson. We just had a switch from Jay Leno over to Jimmy Fallon. What have you thought about The Tonight Show since Johnny left?
Well, let me preface it by saying this, Mark. I worked not only with Johnny Carson, but with Jack Parr before him, Steve Allen before him.
Mm.
And before those three Tonight Show hosts, there was a guy named Jerry Lester who had a show called Broadway Open House with Dagmar, and Jerry Lester, who wrote Orange Colored Sky, was the orchestra leader. So I've been with every Tonight Show host except the brand new ones, and I wish them luck. It's a very, very tough thing to do an hour and a half show every night, five nights a week. It's a very tough grind, and I was very, very fortunate to be with Johnny when he started, because we became good friends after that. You know, Mark, in your business, and you've probably experienced it yourself, when these big guys get really big, like Johnny Carson, they don't know who their friends are. So they surround themselves with managers and agents and PR people to ward off the people with their hands out all the time. But since I started out with Johnny, and his brother Dick, by the way, was the director of The Tonight Show when Johnny did it. So it was interesting to work with Johnny, and everything you've heard about Johnny, about being a nice guy, believe it, because he was. Very, very sincere guy, made everybody that came on his show feel like a star, you know?
Well, a lot of people, though, say that they couldn't really become friends with Johnny. He wasn't really that kind of guy.
Later.
Yeah, it was later? So when you...
Well, at the beginning, he went through a lot. He went through a lot in his life before he came on The Tonight Show. But, later on, all those five nights a week, that's like about 10 stars, 15 stars a week that you book on your show, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, all their managers and agents have other friends, and they're all after him. And your phone rings off the hook, and you can't be free. And so he wasn't belligerent or standoffish. He just had to be alone a lot.
He was,
and unfortunately, he as time went on and the years went on, he saw relief in cigarettes and probably too much whiskey. You know, but no, he was no harder to get along than other people I've worked with, like Clint Eastwood or Bob De Niro or any of those people.
Yeah.
And you know, so.
Well, he was under siege. I guess that's what you're saying, pretty much.
That's a good way to put it. Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. Under siege.
Yeah. So we talk a little bit about Johnny there, but I want to talk a little bit about the music industry, too, because you were into that and you've written it. You have in this book a number of songs that you wrote that kind of never went anywhere, and you went regularly to some big name people who actually allowed you to come in and talk to them but do you think that aside from Christmas Eve in My Hometown, which was a fantastic song that is still enjoying some recognition as the GI Christmas song,
thank you.
Do you think that you maybe just missed other things too, just, you know, for various reasons?
Well, I guess we're going back when I started out as a songwriter. It was after World War II. I finished college, and on the night of graduation, I hopped up a train to New York to be a songwriter, and I became a page boy at NBC. I got a job that would feed me. And in between tours, my buddy Don Upton, who wrote Christmas Eve in My Hometown with me, we wrote Christmas Eve. And a year and a half later, the Korean War came along. I was single. I had experience, and it looked like with the Cold War with Russia and Korea upon us, we had no armed forces. So I joined this NBC psychological warfare unit and was sent to Europe. And that's when I got over there. I was over there for 2 years, and I worked as PFC Eddie Fisher came over, and I outranked him, and I asked him to record the song for American Forces Network, which he did, and it became the biggest Christmas song in Europe in 1951. Now let me fade out and fade up, because about 2 years, 3 years later, I'm back as a civilian, and the music business, it changed dramatically. The Beatles invaded our shores, and rock and roll came in. And you know, I was like 26 or something like now, and I couldn't write rock and roll, and a lot of songwriters couldn't. So we had to make choices. And a lot of the songs, Mark, that are in my book, I wrote during those days, but no one was recording them. It was all the rock music and the other music that came into force. So. Little by little, I just had to decide, okay, Stan, what do you do? What is your best fort? Is it writing words? Is it writing music? My best fort was writing a melody that stuck with you all through the night. And knowing that, I said, okay, now that I'm working with NBC, I'm going to write their themes. So I wrote the original Tonight Show theme and the NBC Sports theme and the Hallmark theme and the Midnight Movie theme. But no one would back my sessions. I had to go to Paris and London and hire big orchestras and conduct them myself, and then come back and show them to producers, and they say, "Yeah, we want them." And that's what I did. I got into writing themes, and the songs. You know, I asked somebody from Nashville, a fellow named Billy Sherrill, one of the biggest producers in Nashville. He's recorded Tammy Wynette and George Jones. I said, "Billy, if Your Cheating Heart was written today, 2014. I just talked with Billy a couple weeks ago. If Cheating Heart, the great song Cheating Heart, were written today, would it be recorded?" He said, "Not a chance." Now, that's a big song.
Yeah. Well, again, music changes, and you know, some of the songs that the Beatles did would never make it now either. So
that's a good way to put it. That's it. Yeah. That's the answer. So.
It's interesting. You know, I wanted to go back to something because there's so many things in this book I want to get into, but we don't have that much time. But
I'd like to talk with you some other time. You are a major. You've published poetry and self-published, and I would welcome your expertise as a self-publisher. You know, sometime, not today, but sometime I'd like to be able to do that with you. Would you do that with me?
Absolutely.
I appreciate that,
absolutely.
Mark. Thank you.
But
you know, what were you saying, sir?
So, well, you had mentioned earlier that you were a member of the NBC unit that was dispatched to Europe as a psychological warfare group. I'm really curious to know about this because A lot of people say now that NBC, now MSNBC and NBC, are pretty much covering up for the President of the United States and doing propaganda for them, for the administration around the country. It sounds to me like you were doing something similar back then for the war effort.
Well, here's the thing. During World War II, there was no psychological warfare unit in our country like the Japs had or the Germans had. Psychological warfare, meaning leaflets being dropped from airplanes or flyers, radio, but get out of town, we're coming in, we don't want to hurt anybody, you know what I'm saying? That's, mm-hmm. and that sort of thing. We didn't have one during World War II, so afterwards, General Sarnoff, who owned RCA and NBC, formed a psychological warfare unit that met daily in one of the NBC studios in Rock Center, and NBC page boys and account exec salesmen and whoever was the broadcast arm, and the New York Daily News with Bill Patterson was the leaflet arm, and we would meet every day. And as it looked like single guys were going to be called up, I joined this 301st because I didn't want to go back into the Pacific. You know,
yep.
At least as in the capacity that I did during World War II. So I figured I'll stay in radio. So I joined this broadcasting and leaflet group, went down to Wall Street, signed up, and a month and a half later, I'm on a boat going to Europe because of the Cold War with Russia. We needed that covered over then on that side too.
Mm.
So that's what it was. It was radio and leaflets. And when we got over to Europe, the Cold War with Russia wound down, and we didn't need any psychological warfare unit. And this might interest you, Mark, because I was a supply sergeant for this 301st that was based out of Frankfurt. And I listened to the radio to Mel Riddle on AFN doing the news. And I had this Christmas song that was just published, Christmas Eve in my hometown. And I got in my Jeep. I went to AFN headquarters that was in a real castle outside of Frankfurt. And I asked him if they could play my record. And he said, "I'm sorry, Sarge. We're a government station, and it's got to be clear to Armed Forces Radio and Television Service in Los Angeles." So I said, "Well, thank you." And I walked across the cobblestone courtyard into the bellied up to the bar with who was there, with Mel Riddle, that had just got off the air.
Mm.
And he said he was also news chief of the network. I said, "How many stations do you have on the network?" He said, 16. I said, "What's your power?" He said, 150,000 watts. I said, "Wow, clear channels back home are only 50,000. He said, "I know. We're bigger than Radio Free Europe, Voice of America, and AFN combined."
Hmm.
So he said, "By the way, I'm going to leave and go into civilian life. You got the rank. How'd you like to take my job as news chief?" Yeah, that's the goodness, Mark. So within 24 hours, I'm being driven to Heidelberg to cut my papers, and now I'm the military news chief of the American Forces Network of all of Europe. How's that?
Wow!
Is that something?
That was a very good spot going to the bar that day.
I think so. Yeah. But I don't know if I've answered your question. Sometimes I get excited about this whole business and I get off track. But
that's okay.
Steer me back, Mark.
You also won an Emmy as a director of The Doctors. I didn't realize that.
Well, I left The Tonight Show after being with Johnny for about 5 years, and I went to The Doctors and stayed on that show for 5 years. I was associate director, sometimes director. And my show that I directed won the first Emmy in daytime drama. And so I've got an Emmy as a director of a soap opera.
Now, where is your Emmy right now?
In my house, in a little old drawer someplace, but a little plaque's on the wall here.
Yeah.
The National Academy of Television Arts and Sciences honors, That's kind of neat.
See, I don't like when people... I've actually had some people on that have multiple Oscars, and I'll say, "Where are they?" "Oh, I keep one in the bathroom," and... You know,
oh, no.
Come on. I have a trophy room in my house, and it has stuff in it. You know, why not? There's nothing wrong with that.
You know, my wife always says you have a right to be proud of something. Don't erase it. If you've achieved that goal. Be proud of it. Don't hide it. Don't be modest. You fought hard to get there, and you earned it, so take the credit.
Yeah. Now, one of the things that Stan has done, folks, and I know that all of you out there will echo me, one of my favorite shows was Love Boat, and you were an assistant director on that show.
Yeah.
Some episodes, right?
Yeah, there's a first assistant, and there's a second assistant, and I was the second assistant director. I did all the early Love Boats with Gavin McLeod and Bernie Capel and all those, Lauren Twees.
Now, how was that to work on? Was that a fun place to work at?
Oh, 20th Century Fox lot in L.A. was just gorgeous. It was in the days, you know, when there weren't so many superstars and everybody was struggling to keep in television. And, oh, it was fun, especially when we, you know, I had my job on the Love Boat was to book all the extras. That's what a second assistant does.
Yeah.
And so, ordinarily we had an extra bunch of maybe 12, but when we did a swimming pool scene, I could hire maybe two dozen more people. And so that was a lot of fun.
So you're, wait a second now. Stan, your job was to hire, like, girls in bikinis?
It was a tough job, Mark, but someone had to do it.
I guess so, Stan. Wow, he suffered. He suffered through
it's
this.
Tough. It was a tough life.
Suffered for his art. That's what he did.
There you go.
Yeah. But you also were an assistant director on Dallas, too?
Not the regular show, but when they went to Hong Kong, I had been in Hong Kong doing a movie with Chuck Norris, The Blade of Hong Kong. And the Dallas people needed to do some scenes in Dallas, and they knew that I knew Hong Kong and the production area there, so they asked me if I would take the company over there for a couple of weeks to film some scenes. So, yes, I did. I was able to work with them for a while.
That's cool. I know you've done a lot of films, and folks out there might know some of them, like maybe Romancing the Stone or...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Or, Any Way Which You Can. And there's a number of them that you've done. And
Uncle Billy.
Did you enjoy doing the movies as much as you did television and music?
Mark, you would love it. I will tell you, music, radio, television, making a film... I want to make a movie, Mark, out of Razzmatazz, My Life in Music. That's my next goal after I try to move this book forward, mm-hmm. is to do a movie. Do you know that my son is in the movies, don't you?
I do. In fact, Billy was in
Karate Kid.
Yeah, Karate Kid, yeah.
He was a tough blonde guy in the Karate Kid that beat on Ralph Macchio after the movie and then got his butt kicked in the ring at the end.
That's right. Yeah,
and he and I went to Prague and Poland in 2004 and got an Oscar nomination for a short movie we did there called Most. And so Billy worked with me on some of my movies that I was AD on. I was able to get him in as an extra or something, and so we've been able to work together.
Yeah,
but making a movie is you would love it, Mark. If your experience and the things you've covered in your life and all you've done in your community, to be on a film set is something special.
Yeah, no, I've actually been an extra in a couple of films in the past, and I've been around, because sometimes I'll have someone on the show and they'll say, "Yeah, I'm done doing a movie," and I'll go, "Yeah, right." And then they'll say, "Come on, why don't you come down and we'll give you a line or something."
Wonderful.
Yeah, but are you trying to say that maybe if you do the movie that Billy would direct it?
He'll direct it and maybe a star in it. I have another son, Guy, in Nashville, who's a number one songwriter and an A&R man. He'll write the music. I'll produce it. Mm. And we're working on a screenplay now. And my goal at this particular time is, with my self-published book, is to interest a regular publisher, a book publisher, who will distribute the book in my stead, give me enough monetary advance on the book so that I can hire a really, really top-notch screenwriter to finish the screenplay on my book.
Well, the only way to do that is, of course, to get this one, the one you've self-published, to sell like mad.
So yeah, and that's why I'm going to call Mark Schneider to give me some of his expertise.
That's why you got to get Razzmatazz out there, folks. Everybody that's listening to the show, go out and buy Razzmatazz because it'll help Stan get his movie
there
made.
You go.
Yeah, but I mean, by the way, does your daughter Judy in showbiz at all?
Negative. She's here in Grass Valley, which is.